ocean, I can learn to stand alone. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. I am your host, Patty Vasquez, and we are so thrilled that you are joining us tonight after a Blackhawks win in overtime, Dr. Duffy. How exciting is that?
The Blackhawks have come alive.
We're making our way toward the playoffs, I'm just saying.
It's going to happen.
Am I jinxing it? I know a lot of Blackhawks fans are really mad right now. They just drove into a ditch because they're mad that I jinxed. Okay, whatever.
I think it's okay. I think we're going to be all right.
I think the players are the ones in charge of that part. We are so thrilled that you're with us, like I said, and we would love to have you join us anytime during the evening. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. We encourage you to join the conversation again, 312-981-7200, to call or text us behind the glass. We have producer Tom Hush, and he will be the one answering the phone. He's running the show. And in studio, as I mentioned, we have Dr. John Duffy. And on the line with us, I thought it would be good to check in with a law enforcement expert. We have former U.S. Marshal, Deputy Chief for the Northern District of Illinois, John O'Malley, on the line with us. Hey, John, was there any particular news that grabbed your attention today in regards to perhaps a grand jury in Chicago?
Yes, Patty, absolutely. since we talked last time, we've had a few twists and turns in the Jussie Smollett case.
Now, you and I talked once, and I will just, for those who listen to the show regularly, maybe you've noticed this, maybe you have not. I have only discussed this with our law enforcement expert, John O'Malley. So this is only the second time on my show. We have discussed this because, as I told John, I'm like, I only want to talk about it when we know new information, right? I think it's that's the important part. What have we learned today?
Yeah, and I think that's right, Pat. There's been so many conversations back and forth. Was he involved? Wasn't he? Is he a victim? What's going on? So over the last 48 hours or so, this case really picked up steam. And this afternoon, the Cook County State's Attorney's Office just basically made the decision to go to a grand jury and present the evidence that they had in front of a grand jury. And at about 7 p.m. this evening, the grand jury returned a true bill and indicted him on a felony count of obstruction of justice, filing a false police report.
Now, the first thing I asked you was, is it common when someone fills out a false police report to have them then charged by a grand jury? You know, is it common for someone, you know, when they walk into, for whatever reason, into a police station or you know, a court of law and falsify a document like this, are they generally pursued and prosecuted like this?
Yeah, so I think it really comes down to the totality of the situation. What's the false police report about? Is it a minor incident? Then maybe there aren't charges, but a discussion with the police. And remember, you know, the police investigate crimes. It's then up to the prosecuting attorney, in this case, Cook County State's Attorney, who has a jurisdiction to bring charges. The police don't decide to bring charges on someone. They can make arrests. They can absolutely are involved in the decision-making process sometimes, but really that falls on the Cook County State's Attorney. So I think based on the totality of the situation and the seriousness of the crime that was alleged from the get-go, you know, the Chicago Police Department was kind of in a no-win situation. If they didn't take it seriously and put all the time and effort into investigating what looked like a hate crime, you know, in Chicago that made national news and really put Chicago in a bad light, they were being criticized. You know, now they're being criticized for putting too much time and effort in this case. But in the end, you know, decision was made to charge him. So that's where we're at. He'll appear in court tomorrow, and then the case will go its course. He can either go to trial or he can plead guilty or whatever it's going to be. And this is where his attorney will get into negotiations with the prosecuting attorneys after tomorrow's court appearance.
What other crimes can he be charged with aside from falsifying the police report?
Well, the other situation, I don't know this for a fact, but if he was interviewed by the FBI or the U.S. Postal Inspectors based on the letter that was received at the studios. Now, the FBI was investigating that as a possible civil rights violation because of the language on the letter, and then the U.S. Postal Inspectors were looking at it because the U.S. mail was used to potentially facilitate a crime of mailing someone a threatening letter like that. He if he was interviewed by either one of those agencies or both and stuck with the story and they can prove he was lying, there is a potential for federal crime of lying to federal agents and obstruction of justice. I don't think, based on the fact he was charged in state court this evening, that the U.S. Attorney's Office here in the Northern District of Illinois would pursue those charges. But it is a possibility and could be a totally separate case than the one playing out in Cook County.
Wow. And I know you've been following this story. What information can you share with us about the evidence that is, you know, I know that there's information floating around. We've heard reports that the two suspects that they were questioning were videotaped purchasing some of the items, the rope and things like that. Is that similar to what you've learned?
Yeah, that was released today. That is definitely them on the video purchasing some items. There's been information that they took a rideshare to the area where the staged attack or the alleged staged attack took place. My understanding is that rideshare driver was also called in as a witness and stated that he heard them talking to someone on the phone discussing, you know, staging this attack. Now, if that could be used, his Good Morning America interview could also come back, and they can use that as potential evidence of him, you know, falsifying this alleged crime and really, you know, going to the police and reporting it. So all those things are not good, not in his favor for sure, but that's now going to be up to his defense attorney to, you know, either challenge this whole case or to make a plea with the state's attorney's office and put this whole thing to rest.
What does it mean to law enforcement to have someone manipulate their work, what they dedicate themselves to do every single day, what they intend to do, which is protect and serve, to have someone manipulate them in this way? That's got to be just incredibly frustrating, not just for the people of the city of Chicago, but for the people who are out there every single day putting their lives on the line.
Well, and that's just it, Patty. As you mentioned, you know, it's frustrating, and to the fact that, you know, as we all know, we have a little bit of a crime problem here in Chicago, and yeah, dedicating all these resources to, and then finding out that as you know, day by day, hour by hour, as you're investigating this, you know, blinking lights are going off that this may not be true, is absolutely frustrating. And, you know, just imagine if we were to add up the time and effort that these detectives spent, you know, and my understanding, these guys were working around the clock to try to get to the bottom of this, especially since they were looking at the beginning for two potential victims,
right,
who attacked somebody on the street solely for the reason that they were a minority, or he made some reference to the homosexuality. That's, you know, they're going to take that extremely, extremely serious. And again, the national spotlight on the city did not make Chicago look very good.
John, I didn't want to, if you wanted to ask any questions, you're welcome to.
No,
Dr. Duffy joins us in studio.
Hi, John. I was wondering the same thing about how frustrating this must be for law enforcement and for the city overall. And whether the end point would have been the same were this not so public, you know, like, because this is, it's become such a national story now that it seems like if we didn't come up with something that felt like a solid answer, that wouldn't fare well for the city. And if it were something that were a little less public, maybe it would have just dissipated. Is that possible?
You know, of course, you know, it was brought to light because of his status of being an actor on a show that's filmed here in Chicago.
Right.
And then part of the problem, though, is that he, you know, was the one who really pushed it, I think, and yeah, you know, almost went out of his way to make it a national story. And I think, you know, within the first week or so, you know, don't forget, these detectives, I know it may be hard for him to believe, but they may have interviewed one or two people in their career. And they get a real feel, and you know, without joking, real victims, and they know the difference when someone's a victim.
Yeah.
You know, so they're seasoned, and they knew this is what they do.
Yeah.
And so they can kind of get a feel for what's going on. Now the other thing is why, and then to try and prove that this wasn't true. So they did a pretty good job of, and they have to have make sure all the I's are dotted, T's are crossed, before they consider bringing charges. Now, he had the opportunity, you know, within the last 4 or 5 days to come in. That was widely publicized. You know, we just want him to come in. He's not a suspect. We still consider him a victim. We want to come in and talk with him. And he refused to do so. So finally, you know, they decide, well, you know, we're not waiting any longer. We're going to do what we need to do so the wheels of justice spin, and it'll all be settled now in court.
Remarkable, and such a strange story. Again, John O'Malley, former U.S. Marshal, Deputy Chief of the Northern District, and a good friend of WGN Radio. John, I want to thank you for walking us through situations like this, and I do want to thank you. You know, it was a really heartbreaking day on Friday as the shooting in Aurora was unfolding, and the traumatic and tragic results of that day. And having you and your voice on the air with Rokan's show, I thought was really helpful. I know we were all trying to understand it, and I'm sure you were as well in any situation like that. So I want to thank you for joining us that day as well.
Well, it's my pleasure to do so. If I can lend some kind of, how things happen, why they happen, if I know, I'll be more than happy to share them with you. And I'm just glad the Hawks won tonight.
Yeah, me too. Go
and
Hawks.
Exactly.
And go Sox. You never thought you'd hear me say that, did you?
Baseball season is coming on. That means the weather's going to change eventually.
Yes.
That's
Chicago.
Right. We've turned the corner.
Yes, I have to believe that that's true. As long as everybody keeps saying it, I hope it will happen. John O'Malley,
absolutely.
We'd love to see you in the studio when your time allows. And we want to thank you again. And we'll be talking to you again, I'm sure, in the next week or so.
Absolutely. Have a great show, Patty.
You have a great evening and talk to you soon. Thank you so much. When we come back, more conversation. What do you guys think happened? What are your thoughts? I know we're already getting a few texts and speculation. This is something I have not speculated about. Now that we're closer to some answers, I will share my thoughts. And my family, I was sat in a booth, in the producer's booth one night with some folks here and thought, what do you guys think? And none of us want to say anything.
Yeah.
So maybe we can start talking more in a moment on 720 WGN. Dr. John Duffy joins us in the Allstate Skyline Studios, and you may have heard him this morning on Bill and Wendy's, and been like, did he hang out all day to do your show?
Just loitering all day, waiting, Patty.
Well, you also you see folks throughout the day.
I do,
and you have conversations and help them through things. And I have to wonder, in this situation, we're talking about Jussie Smollett, and we will talk more about this after 11 o'clock. We do want to ask you later on, and you can text us. We'll go back through the texts if you want to let us know. I'm curious. If, you know, has anybody ever, have you ever been in a situation where maybe no one believes you is mm-hmm. one way, right? Like, you know exactly what happened. And I think that this is what people were hoping, at least in some situations. Like, there was no good ending to this story, Doc.
No.
There was never a good ending to this.
No, there was only the potential for closure, right?
That
we would know maybe what happened, right?
Right. Or justice.
Yeah.
That's what, and ultimately, I think at our very core, we always want justice. Like, if I see a movie where someone doesn't get their comeuppance, I walk out very unhappy.
I think a lot of us feel that way, right?
Yes.
The dissonance of, you know, boy, that didn't end right. It didn't seem fair.
And in this situation, we want to know, have you ever, something ever happened to you that no one believed you? And in this instance, then, have you ever been accused of doing something that you didn't do? Because he's saying, I mean, this could have been a situation, I wanted to ask John O'Malley, like, when people falsify a police report, and you can be prosecuted, as John mentioned, for a class 4 felony. Have you ever been in a bad relationship and someone wants to get back at you, so they do something like this, whether it's spreading rumors about you, or, so we'll talk about that after 11 o'clock, where somebody has used, their ability to spread stories against you.
Yep. I've definitely worked with people who could say yes.
That's not great. We'll come back in just a little bit. After the 10:30 news, we're going to have some of our friends from the Porchlight Music Theater join us about a great production they have going. And let's hear about that when we come back on 720 WGN.
No business like show business, like no business I know.
You know, I really wanted to go see the latest production of A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder, and I was told, Dr. Duffy, that the day I wanted to go, they were sold out. And I was like, oh, Darn you. Bad planning on my
part. Theatergoers.
Bad planning on my part. But you know what I get to do? I get to interview some of the cast members. We have Matt, is it Kroll? Matt Kroll.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was going to say Kroll, and I tried to get all fancy because I saw the L and the E and the W. You know,
Yeah. Well, I'm often mistaken for Matthew Crowley from Downton Abbey. So, and I don't mind.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah. We'll do that. And we also have Andres Enriquez.
That's right.
And he played. Okay, so you play, Matt, you play
the dice with family.
The whole family?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, eight family members. Yeah. Yeah. And all of them are equally crazy in different ways.
We will get to that in a moment.
You bet.
And the mental gymnastics you do for that. I love it.
Oh, thanks for that.
You're wonderful. Andres Enriquez plays Monty Navarro, and Charisse Hamilton plays Eugenia. And again, all part of the production of A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder. Well, since you play eight of the characters, walk us through a little bit about this. Because I saw the clips. It looks incredibly dynamic. It is. My husband was like, we have to go see that. And so I have to take him
and
out.
You and he's right.
He's right. Yeah.
He's
right. Yeah.
He's correct.
A wise man.
Yes.
It's a really charming, bizarre, unique little tale about a young man who discovers that he's heir to a fortune at a family that he's just learned that he's part of.
And he has to kill everybody.
And yeah, he's ninth in line, so he's got to get rid of the first date. Yeah. And he gets very creative with that.
Yeah. This isn't funny. It's not funny to say that, but yes, it is.
But it is.
It's absurd.
Yeah, you got to see it. Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Dark
comedy. And it's absolutely set up to be very satirical from the get-go. So, I mean, there's a tone that's established for the show. So it doesn't feel uncomfortable to laugh at it. You know, it's very Bugs and Daffy.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, there you go. The bigger, the better, then.
That's right.
And then, Andres, what about your character?
My character is the titular gentleman in The Gentleman's Guide. So he is the one who discovers his fortune.
Ooh.
And his and what he must do in order to become the next Earl. And as a result, he takes the audience along the journey with him. He literally speaks directly to them, telling him his tale about the about what he decided to do and how he did it.
Is he trying to convince the audience?
There's a little bit of like the thing is it's kind of told retrospectively, so he's already done it.
Oh, here's what happened.
So it's not like he's like, should I kill them? Right? No, he's like, so I did this, and here's why I did this. He sets it up right at the top that he's like, I need to tell the absolute truth of what has just happened, whether or not you like me or not. But the idea is, you know, in fingers crossed in my portrayal, that he is likable from the start so that you are on his side. And then in turn see him in his distraught position versus you seeing Matthew as a Dicequiths in their absolute lunacy. And you're like, oh, yeah, of course he's got to kill those people.
They're all awful.
Well, it doesn't make sense. I mean, after all, Doc, it is the guide. So he has to have done it all in order to give us the guide.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Were you to be in a similar situation, here's how you do it.
Right. Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. Yeah, I guess it is a guide at the end of the day.
Yeah, right. So
it's a how-to.
And Charisse, tell us about Eugenia.
Oh, well, Eugenia, she comes at the very end of the show, and she is a woman who knows what she wants. She gets what she wants. She's one of those people in this story who has the benefit of being, she has money, she has wealth, she has position, and she doesn't have to worry about what people think about her.
You're sounding like you're trying not to spoil something for everybody is what I'm feeling.
I'm trying.
There's an element of surprise, which makes it
I'm like, what is she trying to hide now?
I mean,
come on, Charisse, we're all friends in this.
we're all friends.
Yes.
I mean, in this show, I definitely play an ensemble member.
Right.
And so most of what I do is I tell the story. I help tell the story. And so a lot of my characters are they are background characters, but Lady Eugenia is definitely a pivotal part in the
she's
play.
She's a forefront character.
She's a forefront character.
It's funny because you can watch Cherie sort of really wanting to show her off, but you're being so reserved about it that they're sort of dazzling in a way. I'm enjoying it.
There's a really lovely surprise, and you know, because I mean, you don't know anything about this.
Yeah.
This Eugenia till she pops up at the end. And,
you really don't.
And it's really just kind of delicious where how she shows up and the sort of the piece of the puzzle that she becomes.
Well, I that's the lovely part of this show is that there are so many like small little characters that are a huge part of this show and a huge part of I don't know, like Lady Eugenia is. She's a delicious surprise. I was like, oh my goodness, I get to do this. But it is one of those parts that you kind of have to wait for.
Sure.
And wait, they do every night.
But
when is it worth it?
Was this something, had you had a chance to see this at all before it came to Chicago? Was this something you'd
I hadn't seen it at all. I'd seen a couple of clips, you know.
Sure,
it was produced in New York, 5 years ago.
Right.
And it was, I think, a huge surprise hit. It ran for a couple of years. It was very successful in New York, and then I think it subsequently had a very nice tour life to it. But this is the first time it's being produced regionally in Chicago.
Now, is it at all macabre, or is it all kind of, because you know, you think of Sweeney Todd, like for some reason Broadway loves a little bit of the macabre.
I love the style of this because it's very tongue in cheek,
right?
Yeah. But it is very macabre. I mean, I love the sort of the palette of the costumes and the color. I mean, as soon as you walk in, it's almost like an Edward Gorey drawing, you know?
Ooh. Yeah,
these very gaunt figures,
right.
Lots of really fun lines. And the design is exquisite, and it's creative because where we perform right now is out of the Ruth Page Center, and there's not a lot of room down there, so they found a very creative way of using every square inch of the space to sort of further the plot without running out of room. And that's a task.
And for our listeners, and you should go see this production, as you can tell from the cast, they're very thrilled to even be a part of the production. It sounds like I can hear your voices.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I mean, to be working is great, but it sounds like this is a different level.
Yeah, well, this is definitely like, this is the show to be in right now in town. Yeah, it's such a thrill to get to do something that hasn't been done anywhere else.
Because of the style, it's so kind of unlike what you normally see in Chicago. What I love about Chicago is that you oftentimes see some very gritty, some very very real kind of grounded work. And while this also has that, this is much more it's a very stylistic sort of show.
Yeah.
We've been talking about how dark and macabre it is. But it's
hilarious.
It smacks of Monty Python. It smacks of that really great physical and British comedy that just throughout, you know, there's bits in between the bits, you know, it's and you never stop laughing, you never stop seeing something new on stage, and it's a whirlwind, and so it's absolutely fun.
For our listeners, it is running through March 16th, and as Matt mentioned, it's at the Ruth Page Center for the Arts, which is located at 1016 North Dearborn, right here in Chicago, and you can go to porchlightmusictheater.org for ticket information, and we're going to learn more from our guests when we come back. You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show, 720 WGN, and don't forget, everything is podcast, so this is going to be a podcast, so you'll be able to share this with folks as well. You can
hear that, Mom?
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
You can subscribe to it on iTunes. You can subscribe to the Patty Vasquez Show on TuneIn and iHeart as well. So we'll make sure it's available for everyone. More in a moment on 720 WGN. There's a lot going on in A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder, the incredible musical playing at the Ruth Page Center for Performing Arts. It's also the Porchlight Music Theater's latest production. The theater, the Ruth Page Theater, is at 1016 North Dearborn Street, right here in Chicago. You can go to porchlightmusictheater.org. If I could read you this whole, like, if I read even just parts of this, all I know is that Monty has to juggle his mistress, his fiance, there's so many other things, and the constant threat of landing behind bars, but he's eager to jump to the front of the line of succession because he's the heir to a family fortune, and all of it will be worth it if he can slay his way to his inheritance, and it's all hysterical. That's all. I'm just trying to.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's it. He's a complex individual.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on, Monty.
Yeah.
Well, let's start with you, Enrique Andres. You have quite the. All of you have a great bio here with all the work that you've done. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in the East Bay of California.
So sorry about these winters.
Hey. It's all right. Just.
You came and you stayed.
Yeah. I there's something about the Midwest that I've been that's drawn me here. But yeah, I've been here in the Midwest for almost 10 years. But I moved to Chicago specifically 6.5 years ago.
All right. For theater?
For theater, yeah. I went to school in Iowa. And those winters weren't bad enough, so I was like, let's move it to the big city.
Maybe some of that lake effect stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, let's see what those lake winds have to say. So I moved here after getting an MFA in acting, and have since kind of just trying to hit the ground running in the theater scene. Yeah. Here in Chicago.
Well, this seems like you've landed pretty well with the, or you've crossed some line.
Yeah, this would be the line. Yeah,
yeah,
this
like
would
the
be
fish line.
He's crossed plenty of lines.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's mad about all the lines.
He hit the ground running, and he keeps running. Charisse, where are you from originally?
I'm from Okemos, Michigan.
Oh, where's Okemos? What part? I know we won't make you do the mitten thing.
Well, yeah, nobody can see. At home. Nobody can see.
I can though. Yes, I can. We're live streaming. I should have mentioned there are cameras in the studio.
Well,
I'm so sorry for you.
Yes. Oh no!
Seriously, see the cameras. See the screen up there.
That's us.
Yeah, there's that.
There we are.
Show me that.
Sorry, you look great.
You know what? You don't.
Excellent.
Cameras, you don't deserve this.
That's right.
I'm from Lansing, Michigan,
okay.
Which is the capital of Michigan. Everyone.
I feel like I love how you have the Lansing chip on your shoulder. You're like, just so you all know.
I do. Don't knock it off.
No.
I have it on there. It's just like balancing.
That is good to know that it's Lansing, everybody. Yeah. The capital.
Not East capital. Lansing, specifically, I would imagine.
Well, you know, I went to school at Michigan State. East Lansing. But Lansing, Michigan.
Yes.
It's different
how
from
much different?
East Lansing.
Okay.
Although I went to school in East Lansing. So, yeah, whatever.
Did you get involved in theater at a young age?
Yeah. I actually got involved in choir.
Okay.
I sang in choir. It was because of my mom, who is from New York, and she was a singer, and I was super, super, super shy, and I was like, I can't talk about singing, and she was like, you should.
Aww.
Definitely. She saw me as a singer very, very early, and she basically said, don't be afraid of who you are, and don't be afraid of anything.
Yes.
If the reason you're not doing something is because of fear, you're messing up. And so there was a choir I wanted to be a part of because I was like, oh, there are people who get together and sing? That's amazing. And she's like, yeah. And I was afraid to be a part of that choir because I had to sing on my own in front of people. And she was like, I'm not going to force you to do anything, but if you're going to not do anything because of fear, I think that that's
it's a shame.
Mistake.
Yeah, that would be a shame. Well, that's great advice.
So,
from
Lisa Hamilton is the reason
Lisa.
I awesome. Do theater.
There you go.
At all.
That's a great start.
She's,
yeah.
She's a great woman.
Oh, that's wonderful. How about you, Matt? Where'd you grow up?
Well, I grew up in Marshall, Michigan, which listening to this moment about Lansing, it's you can find this online, but it was actually supposed to be the capital of Michigan, and it lost by one vote. It's on public record. You can look this up. Yeah,
oh boy.
There's even a governor's mansion that no one's ever lived in. And
okay.
it's super weird.
Do you know
it's
that,
a super weird town.
You know, this is not unique to like just Michigan or your town. The town of Jacksonville, still the people have they want to tell you all the time they were supposed to be the capital
be the
of
capital.
Illinois. Yeah.
Is that right?
I mean,
yes.
Isn't really a bragging right though?
We were almost
to
something.
Yeah. Andres, watch your mouth.
No, but it's
watch your mouth.
It was
Michigan.
Strange. it was this strange bone of contention in like history class growing up. Like, yeah, yeah, we were supposed to be the capital. I'm like, were we? Because we're not.
Well, because in Jacksonville. So apparently the negotiation, they did better apparently because in Jacksonville they got state institutions. They got a prison, a school for the deaf and blind. They got like a college. They were like, here, we'll give you this and we'll put the capital in Springfield. So you guys didn't get anything out of the deal.
No, we literally, there's a governor's mansion that no one's ever lived in. And it's been there for over 100 years.
They built it.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. And they maintain it. Yeah. And you can tour it. It's like strange history.
No one has ever lived
or ever will, but it's like it's landmarked. It's preserved by the Historical Society.
It's quite a consolation prize for coming in number 2.
Yeah. Yeah. Third graders for years to come will know about this building.
Wow. And this is part of what got you in a theater was how dramatic your town is
You know, I got into theater because I was really a very active, busy, irritating kid who wouldn't sit still. And, you know, I think like my dad was an athlete and he, you know, tried to get me involved in sports. And, you know, I was like, I don't want anything that's thrown at me, you know. So, like,
well, that kind of, that's fair. If you can't focus, it's going to be hard to catch the ball.
Yeah, and then competition always kind of made me uncomfortable. But I started in ballet. My mom would take me to go pick my sister up from dance class and I'd watch that and think. And then my mom noticed that was the one time a week where she could not worry about me jumping off of something or, you know, running into something because I was sitting still. So that's how it started. And then
go moms.
No, yeah, moms.
I don't know about your mom, Andres. Oh, no,
yeah. My mom was supportive as well.
Okay. Hi, mom. Just clear the record.
Actually, he was hatched. So it started there. We had a really great community theater in the town I grew up in. So, it was a beautiful place to learn, and be fostered in the arts.
Well, it's wonderful. It's that this production has brought you guys together, and I wish you the very best on this. The run of A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder, running through March 16th at the Ruth Page Center for the Arts at 1016 North Dearborn. That's right here in Chicago, and everyone can go to porchlightmusictheater.org. By the way, it's theatre with the fancy spelling.
Porchlight. That's right. Yeah, if you want a fancy night at the theatre, where it's at.
Yeah, that's right. Go see them, and hurry up. Because when I tried, it was sold out and stuff, but I'll go see it. Tell me lies, tell me sweet little lies. Oh, it is all about lies, Dr. Duffy.
Oh, yeah.
That's what it seems to be the case. The announcement came today that charges are being filed against Jussie Smollett in his allegations that he had been attacked. And it's been really hard to talk about this story because there are so many layers to it. When it first happened, I kept very quiet because it was so surprising. It was appalling.
Right.
But I also felt like I have lived here my entire life.
Yeah.
And I went to public schools. There are neighborhoods maybe I don't go, but this is actually where we work. This attack, right, Tom? It was within a couple blocks of this building.
Yeah, basically right around the corner.
Right. And you know, my husband doesn't like when I walk around here alone at night.
Right.
But I've never really felt like I was in danger. I've never seen people roaming around trying to start trouble. You know, I mean, you know, I'm like anybody else that maybe isn't familiar with the city. I see some homeless folks. I get nervous. For the most part,
sure.
We all just, 'cause this is where we are.
Yeah.
And then the specifics of it, that they were wearing MAGA hats, that they were saying this is Trump country. And some of these things, we're not even sure what he actually has said in his report. Some of this was extrapolated and built. Yeah. And it also came on the heels of the Covington school story in Washington, D.C.
Right.
Where people were already manipulated. Mm-hmm. And your guard, you should just wait, right? And go, oh my God, that's awful. Because no matter what the ending was going to be, it was awful. I never said anything because I didn't feel as though it sounded right to me.
Yep.
But a texter actually kind of reflects my sense on this. I mentioned this to you earlier. In a strange way, I'm glad the Jussie Smollett case worked out this way. Chicago is not guilty. Chicago is a better place than what this would have suggested.
Isn't that interesting that we have that reaction, right?
Tom's uncomfortable. Tom looks uncomfortable with that.
Well, it's and I appreciate what the texter is saying because I think it is such a personal thing whenever, you know, your city is essentially implicated in any sort of bad press. But let's not pretend that we're suddenly clean. Like, this is a specific incident where things came to light. Investigations
Great
were
point.
Had.
Yeah.
And we were you know, people asked questions, as they should. You know, on a personal level, I know I reacted very much, oh my God, I can't believe this happened. I'm very firmly an innocent until proven guilty sort of person.
Right.
But from a journalistic standpoint, from a career standpoint, even I was reading every report and analyzing and asking questions, because that's what an informed citizenry does.
Right.
But when it comes to every other thing, remember, we're still contending with the aftermath of the Laquan McDonald case. So, and yeah, Chicago is not innocent in that respect. So we have to remain vigilant, but also maybe cut ourselves a break a little bit.
And I was telling the doctor that on my way home today, I was speaking to a young man who I happened to be giving a ride home from school. My son. He was like, Mommy, what, you know, why? He's such in the question authority or question everything. Mm-hmm. He's like, well, why, you know, should we believe the police department?
Right.
So, I mean, this is something that will continue to be, and he's going from the Laquan McDonald case.
Right? Sure,
that's where people are feeling, you know, somewhat cynical and suspect. But you were saying that this really, it has so many layers to it, doesn't it, Doc?
So many layers, right? Because in a way, like, if provided Jesse Smollett has not been telling the truth, right? So he's been able to manipulate so many different people, right? You know, in terms of, like, you know, different biases and prejudices against different types of people, and use that to his advantage, hoping to use that to his advantage.
Right.
It really does beg the question, like, what drives somebody to manufacture something like this if it's not true?
And that's something I want to know is, has anybody had a moment where somebody creates this entire fantasy, and not in a good way, something
right.
that, you know, puts them in the position of being either the victim, or, you know, perhaps puts you in a position where you have to defend yourself, where, and once a rumor or a lie starts, that it's so hard to, because do you defend it? Do you try to fight against it? Do you call too much attention to it?
Right.
You know, that's, it's harrowing.
Yeah.
And you feel, it is a trauma, a psychological trauma, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. And this kind of story, it's hard to gauge where the trauma ends, you know, like, because there are people who are immediately involved, but there are a lot of us who feel like, you know, it's been this kind of cloak and dagger, smoke and mirrors thing for a week or two. And I think a lot of people are going to feel a little traumatized. And the next time something comes along,
right,
we're not going to know what to think or what to believe until well into the story.
That's a concern in particular in regards to the Jesse Smollett case. People are worried now, if somebody is attacked, you know, can they not say anything,
right,
or will they be considered somebody who is not trustworthy,
right,
because, oh, now someone's just saying, using this, whether it's their race or their, you know, their choice, you know, whatever it is that people want to label somebody with.
Right. And whatever advantage somebody's trying to gain.
Right.
Yeah.
Or even just saying that you shouldn't be out at night. You know, you shouldn't be out walking alone at night, you know, or, you know, well, it's your, you know, your, the way you look, or your political, you know, choices, or it's, you know, it's because you're gay, it's because you're, you know, whatever, the way you're dressed.
Right.
Right.
But you can find all sorts of reasons to be anxious or afraid or feel like victimized, or that you're somehow doing something to draw that to yourself, right? Which is horrible.
What do you think drives somebody like Jesse Smollett, or as we were saying, maybe somebody, you know, out there has had a person like this in their life where they have to create this drama?
Yeah.
You know, that's the part we're really speculating about, obviously, because
There's
people are saying, was it because his character was being written out? But have you come across people who just really, they want the world, or they want the people in their lives, they want the attention?
Yes.
Of creating a drama like this?
Yes. I've worked with this a number of times. Oddly enough, there have been some disasters on a large scale where I've worked with young people, not necessarily only young people, but some who have said, I had a family member die or injured, when in fact they did not.
Okay.
Looking for that kind of sympathy. And at the core of that, I think, is some degree of, like, self-sabotage, self-loathing.
Oh.
You know, one way or another, you know, you feel undeserving of your station in life. So when I think about this, I wonder, like, I would love to sit down and talk with this actor and really get to know, like, okay, so what is it about you that, because not everybody who's being written off of a television show, for example, would do something like this, right?
Right.
So you wonder, like, what drives that? And typically, in my experience, and again, it's limited, but I've been doing this a while, it typically is derivative of some kind of self-loathing and this feeling like, I don't deserve what I've got here.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's an element of that.
Yeah.
And you really, when somebody creates this sort of drama and lies and manipulates everybody, it once it happens, it's sort of hard to put that back in the bottle. It's also hard, again, to trust that person. There are so many families out there that have somebody that has to be the center of attention or has to manipulate or take advantage of a moment. Jussie Smollett took advantage of a moment, if this is the case.
Of course.
Of people, you know, wanting to believe, oh, there's all these horrible people out there.
Yeah.
If he did, Tom.
Yeah, and a very astute listener just called in and wanted to remind us of a case from pretty far back, the Tawana Brawley rape allegations, if you can remember that.
Yep.
It was essentially a woman who falsely accused a man of rape. And there's been a lot of pieces recently, and as I just pulled up, talking about how one false accusation can do a lot of damage to people who are survivors of different crimes, whether they be hate crimes or sex crimes or anything like that. So I think that's something that's really upsetting a lot of people, no matter where you are.
Right, because we're already at a point where, you know, people, there's the pendulum, I don't even know where the pendulum is anymore, right? They say the pendulum has swung too far one way with the Me Too movement, but then it seems like this is a different direction of, well, then, but things really do happen.
Yeah.
And, people are attacked, male and female. And by the way, the 312 says it could just be that Jussie's a jerk. And that's possible. That can be true of many people.
It could be.
That's not a clinical diagnosis that you would necessarily.
I would not necessarily embrace that fully. I think there might be an element to that, but I think there's more to it than that because there are a lot of jerks.
Yeah, there are so many jerks. You are right about that. Man, they're everywhere. We're hanging out in the Allstate Skyline Studios with Dr. John Duffy. Tell people the kind of practice that you have.
Yeah, what kind of work you do. So I've got a private practice. I work with teens, young adults, parents, and couples.
Mm-hmm.
And I work out in the suburbs. My office is in LaGrange. I've been working there for about 25 years now.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been a while.
It's great. You're not like the Alan Thicke character in Growing Pains, where you've got like your den.
I remember that the setup was in his house. I actually have a friend who has a therapy office in his house. I cannot conceptualize doing this type of work in my home. No, yeah. It's a couple blocks away.
I saw Tom just go, you did not just ask a professional clinical psychologist that question.
Well, I will say that, John, I hope you take this as a compliment. You do have a slight resemblance to Alan Thicke. The facial features are a little different, but I feel you got a little bit of the hair going on.
Yes,
the outfit's true. Very Alan Thicke. It's very dignified.
Yeah,
I'll take
Dapper.
That. I guess this is going a little sideways on me. I think.
Didn't think that was going to happen.
No, well, I didn't see that coming.
The other series that I liked, there was a series with Gabriel Byrne. Did you ever see this? It was In Practice.
I did.
I believe was the name of the show.
Yeah,
so good. I mean. And I don't know. I don't know. We'll come back and talk about some other things. But 312-981-7200. I am curious. I think we've all had somebody in our lives that has had to create a drama, spread lies, try to manipulate people to, for whatever reason, for attention, for revenge. I think some people do that as well.
Absolutely.
Or as you mentioned, self-loathing.
Yeah.
Like they're filling something.
Yep.
There's something lacking, and I know that people want to say he's a jerk, and there's so many situations where we often go, well, what could have, been the one step before this, before the police are involved? Because as you heard our former U.S. Marshal John O'Malley say, going into the police station, filling this out is a Class 4 felony. Falsifying a police report, filing a court order, that kind of stuff. These are all Class 4 felonies, and he's going to be prosecuted. More after this on 720 WGN. I I thought this was going to be a text about Jussie Smollett that we have on the line. It is learning from mistakes means not making the same ones over and over again. The Hawks defense should be ashamed of themselves. I didn't realize that. I was like, okay, mistakes are... No, we're talking about the Blackhawks. I went too far back on the text screen.
Change of topic, yeah.
Change of topic. Now, we are talking about some of the fallout from the Jussie Smollett case and people's feelings about it, and also whether or not you have had someone in your life that has created a drama, has fabricated a story for whatever reason to draw attention to themselves, to make people feel badly for them, maybe as revenge, maybe to keep someone... Sometimes people do it to keep someone in their lives. It's also a controlling thing, isn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely, yeah.
I never really thought of that, actually.
Right.
To control somebody, to make them feel sorry for you, like, you can't leave me now, this horrible thing has happened to
me. Right, this great manipulation, right?
Oh,
sure.
Oh, that's so creepy.
Oh, yeah. I think that happens quite a bit, actually.
312-981-7080. It is. That's a good way to put it. There's that desperation.
Yeah.
312-981-7200. Has there been a situation, and have you been able to move on from it? That's the other hard thing, too. Like, I'm talking about something that happened in my 20s, and we don't have to say how long ago that was. But, you know, I still remember dating this boy at the improv. He was a sound guy, and then he became the manager of the club, and nobody wanted to talk to me because he would tell them, if you go anywhere near her, you will not work at the comedy club.
Wow.
You will not work at the improv. After we broke up, that was, and so he would control that way. We also control the story, you know, and he was able to have that kind of sway over people. He would say that, you know, that I only dated him to get into the business.
Wow.
Which, he was the sound guy.
Right.
When I started dating him, he pushed the buttons on a board like this. You know, it's like,
it's a terrible way to get into the business.
It would be terrible.
That's not the right narrative.
I didn't know that he was going to be the manager. He was the guy that, like, played the intro music for all the comics.
Right.
So it was like, that I slept my way into the business. Like, when I started working in another club, like, he would tell all them that I was sleeping with that manager. Right.
Wow.
So, like, it's really hard for, I'm sure you get, the worst have got to be the kids, like the teenagers with social media and the way rumors spread that way.
That's you know, what I was going to bring up is, like, you know, it is so rampant now because it's easy. It's almost like road rage, right? Because you're not, it's a little impersonal. It's a little removed. You're not looking somebody in the eye when you're kind of picking on them on social media or making something up about them.
Right.
And I'm haunted by this moment. I had a girl in my office a couple of years ago, and she was this really sweet teenage girl. And she said, I could actually ruin this other girl's reputation with one status update. You want to see? And she was willing to show me that in the moment. And I believed her. I believed that was possible.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that as much a function of the stability of the emotions of teenagers as it is the power of social media? I mean, like, if someone, I don't know where he got this shell or this, and I hope he doesn't do it to people. I mean, he doesn't have a Facebook or Instagram account or anything. He can follow, like, tweets and things.
Right.
But he doesn't participate in it. But he has this sort of, like, I just get this feeling that I would feel very badly for the other person that would try to do it to him, and that wasn't a function of what we've done. It seems to have come from him,
right?
But I don't know how we can help kids to sort of not the whole, like, it'll get better is one thing,
right?
But the right now is the part that you need to be able to deal with,
and the right now almost has to be, yes, this sucks. This is, I'm really sorry that you're going through this. You
right.
know, it can't be about, you know, like, what are we going to do next? It has to be, you know, I'm with you on this,
right,
and I feel your pain a little bit before we decide what's the next move here.
I don't even think I told my parents. You know what? Let's save this for after the news, because I think there are, like, these traumas that happen throughout your life where mm-hmm. somebody messes with your life in a way that feels out of control, and it feels for, like, forever. Now that I'm thinking back, I'm like, well, that went away, you know?
But it
comes back, and maybe that's a function of not healing from that and letting it happen again.
Early experiences, they color our lives, for sure.
Man.
Yeah, man.
That's all Angela's fault. More after a moment on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, and we are joined by Dr. John Duffy, who is a clinical psychologist. He has been working with patients in a private practice for over 25 years.
Yeah.
And this has stirred up a lot of emotions today. In the Jussie Smollett case, he filed a police report. He came forward and said that he had been attacked, and viciously so. And there are now charges that he may have made the whole thing up. And I think for many people who have been in a situation, have been victims of crime, this is heartbreaking because you do worry about what will happen next. And for some people, it does bring back emotions of things that have traumatized, have hurt them in their lives. And I want to thank Elizabeth for wanting to join our conversation. Elizabeth, thank you so much. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah. I was telling your screener that I was a victim of statutory rape when I was 14. He was 18, and I didn't know any better, and nobody ever talked to me, and I figured I belonged to him. And finally, I grew wise enough, I guess, where I just broke away from him. Uh-huh. And I went to a teacher's college, became a teacher, but during the health periods, the girls, because they had gyms separate from the boys at that time, I used to tell the girls, if you get a funny feeling when you're with somebody or they put their hands on you funny, immediately tell your parents. Sure enough, 3 days later, a father came to me and he thanked me, a man he had brought into his home from another country who he was sponsoring had been attacking his 9-year-old daughter.
Oh.
Wow.
That's heartbreaking.
Yes.
And at the same time, here was something that affected you so traumatically that you were able to help somebody else. That's remarkable.
Yeah, but you know what? Right after my husband died, it all came back, and it's like a nightmare. I also had a child who was being met when we dismissed them. I taught fourth grade in the little village area. There was an elderly man waiting for her all the time, and we all assumed that it was her grandfather. And one of the other children said, no, he's not the grandfather. He lives down the block. She goes to visit him. So I told my principal, and to thank God for those two detectives that came in, and sure enough, her mother was pimping her out.
Oh my gosh, Elizabeth, you've got quite a story here, right? I mean, so in a couple of those instances, it sounds like there were people who were there to help people out, but it doesn't sound like that was necessarily true for you when you were 14 years old.
Right. Of course, I'm going to be 86 in 2 more months, so it was different times, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I also think, Elizabeth, I want to give space for, you know, what you said about all these emotions came rushing back after your husband passed away, because I was mentioning how these traumas kind of do stay with us forever. It doesn't, you know.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Yeah, so you feel like you can put it in remission for a while. Were you surprised when it came back, Elizabeth?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I raised 2 daughters and a son, and I accompanied my daughters everywhere, to their piano lesson, everywhere, and I told them why.
You wanted to make sure they were safe the whole time, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. So do you feel like you can relax that, like, you know, as time passed, do you feel like you were able to kind of, like, heal to some extent from what happened when you were a kid?
Yes, but I still hate him.
Oh, of course, yeah. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's completely reasonable. But I'm so sorry for what you went through.
Tell those parents out there that they have to have these talks, honest to God talks, with their children.
I also want to make sure that you're having the talks. That's why I was so honored that you wanted to share this very personal story with us. Do you talk to somebody about the things that you went through?
My husband.
You did?
When I first met him, yes.
Yeah. But I mean, now, because you know, I think it's something that, you know, maybe you want to, or here you can put it with, you know, with us. And again, we're grateful for that.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think the more you tell your story, you know, the more free you are from it, from the trauma of it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You've done so much, Elizabeth. We're so grateful.
Thank you.
We really are.
Have a good night. We look forward to hearing from you again.
Good night.
Good night.
Night, Elizabeth.
I apologize that we have that. I was trying to go back and forth because we do have a little bit of an echo that we typically have with a line that is a landline. But, you know, I have talked to people who are older who do, you know, there's almost like, does there come a point of like life kind of perspective, you know, and you kind of put all some of the things in place and start going, you know, this than that, it seems. I know that you deal more with young adults and with couples and things like that. I wonder what is the practice of talking to folks who are elderly?
Well, I do some work with some people who are, you know, in their 70s and their 80s.
You do, okay.
And oftentimes, Elizabeth's story is not that unusual, where something will come back and it will kind of give them perspective about why they lived their lives the way they did.
Okay.
You know, in a lot of ways. Like Elizabeth is saying, boy, I kept my eye on my son and my daughter all those years, and now I know why, you know? And sometimes in the midst of things, you forget. Like, you know, what drives this in me? Why am I so vigilant? And it sounds like, you know, once her kids were grown, she was able to kind of reflect back and remember, which is really healthy. You know, it's good to revisit those things so that you can recognize, okay, maybe I can let that pattern go now. I can let that fear go, you know? And to her point, you don't have to let the hate go. You know, you could, that might be really healthy for her to carry, you know?
Right. It's an energy.
Yeah, you
know?
It is.
You know, we often think of, you know, I know someone was saying hate is a strong word. But I mean, how else do you describe something? You get to hate parts of your life that were traumatizing, where someone did something evil to you.
I think to restrict yourself from that is anxiety provoking.
Yeah. I want to mention the 816 wants to make sure that we don't mistakenly describe the Tawana Bradley case as a woman falsely accusing a man of rape. Tawana was a black teen who ran away from home for 4 days and to cover herself resurfaced, covered with feces, claiming to have been raped by several white men, including a policeman and a detective. Tawana was constantly accompanied by Al Sharpton in his first case of visibility and prominence. Not sure of exact subsequent details, but I believe resulted in riots and racially motivated fatal attacks. Way too important of a hoax being goaded for political and personal reasons. Playing the race card, your mischaracterization ignores the extreme similarities of the two hoaxes and potential for resulting harm and danger. That was a listener who had called and made the comments and was joining our conversation.
Mm-hmm.
We were perhaps more of kind of going past it rather than comparing it or saying that they were anywhere near each other.
Right.
Tom, I don't believe was even born yet. I don't remember this case at all.
It was 1988, I believe.
So, yeah, I have no recollection of this case in the least.
Yeah, it was definitely in the 80s. It was a long time ago.
So our mischaracterization comes from a lack of having the immediate knowledge of that.
Right.
So we appreciate your input on it. I'm not even entirely sure that reading your text is accurate. See what I'm doing there. So we do the caveat as well on that. I don't want to. Tom, is it okay if I put Lisa on hold until we come back from the break? Lisa, please hold on. We want to hear your story, and we're so glad that you're calling us and joining the conversation. More in a moment on 720 WGN. We are in the studio with Dr. John Duffy, and I think that there's something to talking these things out and putting them somewhere. And if you feel uncomfortable using your real name, you don't have to, you know, you can use a different name if that helps you at all. If you don't want people to recognize you, we're here for you. More in a moment on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. Joining us is Dr. John Duffy, clinical psychologist who's been practicing for 25 years in private practice. And we've been talking a little bit about past traumas. And I think a lot of people are reflecting on their own lives when it comes to the sort of drama that Jussie Smollett has stirred up. You know, I don't think that we necessarily, when we see a national story like this, you know, when we get these guttural reactions, we don't necessarily always recognize that it's something personal, too.
Yeah.
You know, that it's affecting us in a way that maybe we didn't realize. And Lisa is joining us. We just spoke to Elizabeth, who shared a very personal story. And Lisa, we want to thank you for holding on. What did you want to tell us, Lisa?
Hi, Patty. Hi, Dr. Delphi.
Hi, Lisa.
How are you?
Good. How are you, Lisa?
I'm okay. I can't sleep now because this subject was brought up again. I was going through a divorce. I lived in Galena, Illinois. I was born here but moved up there on a beautiful farm.
Uh-huh.
My husband, I know for sure, burned down my house.
Wow.
An investigator brought it. You know, I had to automatically go to the police. He because they hire an investigator immediately for the insurance purposes.
Sure.
I was cleared of that, and then they brought in an arson investigator. I was cleared of that also, but he continually accused me of doing it.
So you
he hired.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, no. So you had the situation where someone's trying to manipulate everybody around you and to make you out to be the, you know, the one doing all these malicious things.
Correct.
Wow.
He hired on his own dime two different investigators to prove that I did it. That went nowhere except for my friends and family.
Yeah.
I know. He had convinced all my friends, our friends, you know, mutual friends, my daughters, that I had done it. That was just the beginning. He, in court, he tied up all the insurance money until 3 weeks before it was released. So I had 3 weeks to find a house. I couldn't build a house on the property because there was no time.
Wow.
That's how they're... the insurance adjusters and insurance companies work, that it has to be a timeline, even though they extended it for more than a year. So they, I had to find a house, and I didn't want to move back up there because I was too afraid. He had done, I can't even begin to list, you don't have enough time, and I don't want to go through it, of all the other things that he did. Losing my friends and family was absolutely the worst thing. He has all the money. He took three of my businesses through the divorce.
Oh, my gosh.
I had, I know, I had, I moved into three hotels and two apartments before I found this house. I don't want to be here, but I am.
Mm-hmm.
My psychiatrist told me that I was suffering from PTSD, so therefore I made no good decisions.
Sure.
The worst was obviously my daughters. My youngest got married last June. He made me pay for half of the wedding, and I wasn't going to deny her that. He said that he wasn't going to do the wedding unless I paid for half.
Ugh.
Another manipulation. I wrote some notes down here.
So, it's a lot that you've been going through.
Yeah, and I actually had to leave the wedding early because I couldn't emotionally take it.
I can only imagine.
Yeah, I can picture that too. I mean, it sounds like that, you know, just one or two acts of vindictiveness can like create this huge ripple effect through your entire life, right, Lisa?
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah, and it sounds to me like the thing that you have left is the truth. You know something fundamental that is true, and you've lost an awful lot, I know, and my hope for you is that you can recover some of those relationships over time, but in my heart, I hope that you find some solace in knowing, like, okay, I know what the truth is, and there's some strength and some power in that, and in your voice I can hear that you're in a lot of pain, but you're not weak, are you?
Yeah, I'm still standing.
That's right.
I'm still vertical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I feel grateful for that, and I've tried to make the best out of my situation, but he continually has done other things to me that continually alienate my friends, He's brought me to court on separate charges in regards to the other matters that I didn't pay certain people for what was related to the insurance.
Yeah.
Guy that accused me of not paying for the tear down of the house.
Lisa, are there ways? What are you doing to try to take care of yourself?
Seeing a therapist. I'm exercising, eating right, which seems to help. But I do fall back into the eating my feelings mode.
Sure.
I think a lot of us can identify with that.
Absolutely.
Right. But, you know, in this time, I lost my sister to a brain aneurysm.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Three of my dogs. It's just been a nightmare. And the fact that no one believes me is gut-wrenching.
That sounds like really the hardest part. It sounds like and that was something we were talking about earlier, is when nobody believes you, that being feeling like you're adrift. Well, it feels unreal.
And it's got to be difficult. You know, I've worked with people who have been gaslighted in one way or another, and it's got to be particularly difficult to be gaslighted by a number of people in your life, to feel like he's had the power to kind of spread that to other people that you love. And I think maybe it sounds like you're seeing a therapist, and the best you can do, at least in the short run, is kind of work in the margins, work in the time, because he's exerted so much control in your life. But there's still some pockets where you have control, right? You can exercise, you can take care of yourself, you can see your therapist, you can start a new business. That's apparently something you can do. And if you can start to do that, maybe you can feel like some surge of rebuilding for yourself.
And I have to say, Lisa, talking to us, as hard as it might have been, I think that you're also helping somebody out there who is in the situation where nobody believes them, and you know, hearing you can be helping somebody else. I hope that gives you some solace. I hate to do this. I need to run to a break, because we are so grateful that you called us and shared this very personal story with us. Please be well, okay, Lisa?
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you, Dr. Duffy.
Thank you, Lisa.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Remarkable moment. Thank you. More in a moment on 720 WGN. We hope that you're happy, healthy, and safe wherever you are tonight. You're listening to The Patty Vasquez Show. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Joining me is Dr. John Duffy. He has been practicing clinical psychology for 25 years in private practice. And thank you so much for guiding some of our listeners through. You know, sometimes people are trying to just go to sleep, and, you know, they go to sleep with us, and we're a familiar voice. And then, you know, like with Lisa and Elizabeth, you know, we stir up some emotions, and that's, you know, that's kind of part of the conversation. And I'm glad that we're here for you. And I know that there must then be other people who are perhaps trying to go to sleep, or they're in their cars thinking about these things. And there's so many issues when it comes to past traumas, or going through a situation where somebody has manipulated the other people in your life to believe a lie, and in some ways destroyed part of you.
Sure.
Your identity.
Absolutely.
You know, and you mentioned the one thing you have to hold on to is your truth.
And fundamentally, that's what you have. And situations like that, you know, it's got to be your anchor. And you need an anchor that's kind of like an identifier for you.
Yeah, to know who you are, to hang on to that. And this listener brings up an interesting point from the 312, and this is in regards to the Jussie Smollett case as well. Sensationalism over substance has become the new normal. Respect and restraint have been replaced by a culture of quick responses, short fuses, and juvenile behavior. Media and social platforms could and should be better utilized to focus on solution to issues rather than pushing the scandal du jour. I believe many are desperate to return to a higher standard. I think that you can't have one without the other. I honestly think that you know there's the it's all, you know, the horse is out of the barn, and social media is here, and it is personal responsibility to try to weave your way through that and navigate those waters. I think that some of the great things that have come from social media, whether it's awareness or community, there have been movements that have been started online, and there have been a lot of negative things. I don't know how you have one without the other. It's like anything. It's like life and death.
I totally agree. One cool thing I see with young people is that they're really discerning about it. So we were talking earlier about how the first story isn't always the story.
Right.
And so a lot of young people, when they first hear about something, instead of just saying, you know, oh, I understand now fully what this is, they'll investigate a little bit,
yes.
You know, and withhold judgment until they know a little bit more.
Right.
Recognizing like, this doesn't feel complete.
That's the skill we all need to have.
Yeah.
And I mentioned this earlier, Tom, when the listener called in about the Tawana Bradley story. So even the 816, when you texted me, I did some research and I can't find anything that supports your version of things either. And so, right, even my repeating what you had said about riots and attacks and things like that, it was a media nightmare and there were rallies. So perhaps you're remembering them in a different way. But from history sites and from journalism sites, I went through several pages and I can't find what you're talking about, including some of the things that you shared. So
yeah, 30 years also can distort, right, what we remember, or we selectively remember things. Yeah, of course, right.
A lot of stuff has happened since then. And, you know, when you share something, it does spread very quickly. And even things that start out positively go negatively, and things that start out negatively go positively.
Absolutely.
It's got all these different aspects to it. Yes, Tom?
Well, and to the idea of sensationalism being a new thing, I agree with the texter. I think there's a lot of truth in what they said. But in terms of sensationalism being a new phenomenon, mm-hmm. I don't know if that's... I mean, let's not forget that at one point in journalism, we literally started a war. Like, the Spanish-American War is a direct result of a particular type of journalism that we know, hopefully no longer practice. We try not to practice, but, you know, it's not anything new that a news outlet might use sensationalism for its own personal gain. As they always say, if it bleeds, it leads.
And we also have this romanticized version of the past, and we could pick anything. You could pick anything. One of my favorite examples is the Lincoln Library in Springfield, Illinois, and there's this whole hallway, one where, you know, we have this, when we know there were people that hated him, he was the great emancipator to a part of the country,
right,
that, you know, staked their entire, a lot of their culture on slavery and having this hierarchical system.
Mm-hmm.
And he to them, he was a symbol of destruction. But there are a lot of people in the North who hated him as well.
Right.
You know, they didn't want to, a lot of people didn't want to be involved in this war. So if you go, there's this hallway of holograms of people just saying nasty, vile things that were all written about the president. So you can hear them happening. But you can also, there are all these articles about, you know, calling him all kinds of names and depicting him as an ape and, you know, and tying him to this racism and this, you know, a lot of sensationalism in these papers and things that were and drawings of him and stories. But if you pick any time in history, there are factions that will sensationalize, take things out of context, manipulate the way people think in order to control. I mean, I don't want to get down the path of religion, but, you know, there are things that are used to sort of control people.
Of course. And think about, I had the luxury of being here at this station and talking to Walter Jacobson in the hallway one time, and I was able to ask him about news, and he just pointed out, like, yeah, news, like the way we used to do it back in the 70s and 80s, doesn't really exist anymore because everything's propaganda. All the, you know, 24-hour news stations are kind of, everybody has a bent, and we just try to talk about what happened.
Well, he had a bent, too. I mean,
he had a bent, for sure.
Walter's perspective.
Yes.
Yeah, that was the whole thing.
And
yeah,
let's not pretend that all journalism in the 70s was Woodward and Bernstein. You know,
and like, even those guys.
And those guys had their own personal, whether it was personal failings, professional failings.
Shortcomings, sure.
Yeah,
sure.
And that doesn't make what they did any less important to both the history of journalism and the history of politics in this country. But there were people out there writing total puff pieces. You've got you could even look in the media about journalism. If you watch kind of like farces and movies like Philadelphia Story and The Sweet Smell of Success, specifically is about how lurid the print business was, and how it was super influenced by people trying to get what they want. This is, it's not new for this to be in journalism. It's just more ubiquitous than it has ever been in any point in history because of these massive leaps in technology and communication.
Right.
I think for me, what social media has become is this point of learning way, way more about what my friends think and what they believe, and how I'm like, you are so wrong. I mean, but like, there are comics who, you know, we are, there's one comic I don't even talk to anymore because we went back and forth on the economy, right? Uh-huh. And all of a sudden it became personal, and he was, you know, he went after me, came on my page and went after me, so my friends came after him, and that became personal. But you know, when you used to just like have a conversation with somebody and like have a way of, I think that, to me, and everybody has their own opinion of what what social media has done, the art of debate has both, in some ways, for some people, they've found
elevated
the strength.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And for others, it's just devolved and it's like nobody paying. It's like yelling in a bar over loud music with bad punctuation.
And more often than not, from clients, I hear they don't want to hear what their friends have to say.
Don't.
They're afraid of hearing what their friends
yes.
believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wish I did. And not just my friends, but then like, and you see, you go through these threads, like I click on some story that has 5,900 comments uh-huh. on it, and you're like, why am I going down this rabbit hole?
Right. Morbid curiosity,
right.
Honestly.
Right. Yes, yeah, what's out there? You know, there is that part to it. Yes, I think sensationalism has always been there. Now it spreads faster.
Yeah.
That's the bigger thing. I mean, again, going back to the Covington thing, and now his family is suing the Washington Post for $250 million.
Which I believe is the value of the Washington Post. I mean, that's literally.
I mean, yeah. Well, I mean, I was going to say Jeff Bezos could foot the bill, but after the divorce, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. He's just counting us getting it out of his wallet.
Kidding,
he's like, hold on a second. Kind of like, remember when you would ask your dad for a tenant and like he would make this like, it would be like this big gesture, like, oh.
Right.
All right. What do you get it? What do you need it for?
Yeah. $250 million? Okay, yeah, I got you, kid.
Bezos got on his back. He's going to stretch for that. More in a moment on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200. What are you thinking? We want to know. And don't forget, this will all be podcast. You can find everything that we ever say right here on WGN Radio on WGNRadio.com, as well as subscribing to my podcast on iTunes, TuneIn, and iHeart. Just look for me, Patty Vasquez. Oh, we are in the final hour of the show. Nick D will be up at 1 a.m. This is the Patty Vasquez Show. Joining me is Dr. John Duffy. Our number is 312-981-7200. That is the number to call or text us, and we would love to hear from you. And we have a couple more texts, Doctor, that came in a little bit earlier.
Okay.
Dr. John Duffy is a clinical psychologist in private practice for over 25 years. From the 773, this is something that's actually interesting as well. And I mentioned this before because I was wondering what led Jussie Smollett to create this entire drama to manipulate people, the media, this moment in history where people are already ready to jump on a story like this and go, see, look, that's what they're like. But that's what's happening, right?
Yep.
So, but now it's happening to him. See, that's what they're like. And so people are going to use that language.
Sure.
The 773 says, remember Lady Gaga at Grammys pleading with the world to reach out to someone with mental illness? Will the Hollywood community acknowledge Jussie Smollett has serious mental health issues? I think Hollywood will, yes. I think that partly to save their own face for what they've come out and said.
I think that's right. I actually think that when the dust settles, that's not an unimportant consideration. You know, I'm glad that that texter wrote in because it's easy. Anger comes easily. And with great reason, right? I mean, there were all these resources as we started the top of your show, all these resources spent on this case, right?
Right.
And if in fact this is all manufactured for some personal gain, this is not what somebody well would do, right?
Right.
So in the end, you know, and my profession tends to be very defensive about the term mental illness.
Okay.
But the truth is that not every mentally ill person is going to act out in this way, but some do. Like, so this man, if this is what happened, is not in his right mind. He's not well, and he needs help as much as he needs to be held accountable for what he's done.
And, you know, when we talk about, you know, that it might not manifest in a way like this, but in some ways with anger management issues, it can manifest catastrophically, which it did on Friday in Aurora. And this was a man who, you know, was not being treated, was not, you know, and had a history of violence.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and look, the gun conversation, we're going to continue to have it. He never should have had that gun. There's not anybody who disagrees with that.
No, that's pretty clear.
You know, when we say that we have these laws in place, it was not, and I'm sure that there's somebody at the, you know, the state police department who's trying to figure out, you know, how did we give him this void?
Right.
And then you wonder, would he have then found an illegal way to find a gun? I don't know. But when it comes to, you know, the idea that someone would be this enraged and be ready, right? No, going into this meeting, knowing that this is what they wanted to do.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and
it's terrifying.
It is terrifying. And there's this subset of people, and we're really not there yet in terms of profiling who's going to behave this way and who's not. But when they're in a great deal of pain, instead of internalizing it, which most of us tend to do, right? So most of us become symptomatic, we internalize things and we become anxious or we become depressed. And some people externalize it in this violent moment, you know?
Is it wanting people to suffer? They can't?
I think there's an element of retribution to it, but having worked with some people, back when I was in training, I did some work with violent criminals.
Okay.
And they would describe their moments as this kind of fog where I can't think of the other right thing to do, so I'm going to do this. And I feel so angry or I feel so wronged, I can't think of another way through this.
And it seems like a door to go through. It seems like that would be the release for them, is what they think.
That's the release.
Wow. Yeah. You know, and when you say that, you know, you guys are very protective in your field of the term mental illness, the term that people use a lot as well, and you know, I'll say it too, is the word evil.
Yeah. Right?
That's not a clinical diagnosis. Again, we were talking about jerk earlier. Evil, it feels evil.
It does.
And but that's not tangible, I guess. There's not a way to sit and cross from somebody and go, you're evil. And believe me, my family has been the victim. We are survivors of a homicide. And you know, the term has been used for my brother's killer as well as evil. But I also know that person suffered enormously as a child. And that doesn't take away my pain or justify anything that happened to my family. But for me, it's like, what if that person had been loved and been accepted for who they were?
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, that's the way I go, is that then my brother might have survived.
Yes. Sick about your loss, you know, truly. Right. Evil is almost the easy way out because it doesn't suggest any way of preventing something to happening a generation from now, right? But if we can find a way to find the people who are hurting that badly that they're willing to inflict that kind of pain or take somebody's life, if we can figure out, okay, who are these people, you know, and how can we identify them and how can we get them what they need, maybe there's some means of prevention built into that. But the word evil is kind of a non-starter. There's not much you can do with that.
Right.
Yeah.
Then it's sort of an acceptance that, well, this is going to keep happening.
Right. Yeah.
Instead of what can we do? Where are the inroads? Yes, Tom?
Well, it just reminds me of every time that there is a mass shooting, the Onion posts the same article just with the details changed, and the headline is nothing to be done, says only country where this regularly happens.
Right.
And that's where satire comes in and really packs a punch, because you just think about it, where it's like, yeah, this is the only country where gun violence or of that magnitude happens on a regular basis. And it's depressing. And it gets into the psychology of what can be done. Like, you definitely, when you see it happen time, I mean, I even remember seeing the Aurora news breaking here. I was here at the station. And my first thought was, what can we even do anymore?
Right.
Because we keep trying. We keep trying to have the conversation, and it goes literally nowhere.
And that's kind of the scariest thought, isn't it? That, you know, like, these things happen so frequently, and, you know, will we remember Aurora a year from now, or will there be so many shootings between now and then that, you know, those words, you know, Aurora, Parkland, you know, that they just kind of fill in the gaps month by month by month, right, instead of us really thinking, like, this is the only country where this happens on this kind of scale, mm-hmm, right? So we should probably take a look at what the variables are, and there's more than one variable that plays into that.
Yeah, it's, yeah. And there's also, you know, watching the trauma. I mean, like Vegas, right? I mean, in the middle of all of that, right? We talk about Parkland, and, you know, Parkland was in a year almost to the day as Aurora, and in between that was Las Vegas.
Yeah, it was in the middle, and it was enormous. I mean, you know, like that Vegas shooting
and no
is
answers.
Something,
yeah,
right, that we almost forget about. And think about the horror of any one of these events. You know what I mean? And we should all be sick about each and every one of them, but they come with such frequency that we become a little bit numb, I think, two of them, and we kind of move on to the next one. And there was a story in the paper today suggesting, like, please don't let this become so ordinary, you know?
That's my, again, you know, people want to just shake their head or say something is evil. It isn't. And I was going to ask you, it was actually on my list. I sent you a rundown. Are we just becoming so overrun by, we just don't even, it doesn't register anymore,
yeah,
the same way it did when Colorado happened, when I was younger, the high school.
Columbine. Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Well,
and I say Colorado, and you're like, oh, the movie theater. But no.
You're referring to something else.
And that was crazy. I mean,
right. Eerily, also a town called Aurora.
Right, right. And that was something I had thought of as well. And Aurora, you know, and I wanted to, when we did the show on Friday night, I wanted to remind people, you know, because we have so many listeners all over the country and all over the world, actually, that Aurora, Illinois is a great community. It's someplace I've had the pleasure of not just hanging out in, but I've performed. I've hung out with people all the time. I've done performances for the domestic victims of violence shelter there. I used to work at the Roundhouse all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And I love the community of Aurora. We were honored to have State Senator Linda Holmes on the show to talk to us about her community. But that's the part that gets lost. Now it's just towns, right?
Right.
It's Aurora, Illinois, Aurora, Colorado, Parkland.
Sandy Hook. Yeah.
Yeah. I know there are people who are like, could we change the topic?
Right.
Let's take a break. More after this on 720 WGN.
You've heard the saying of it.
Swearing in the studio right now, Tom. Can you hear me swearing? Okay. I wasn't going to talk about this right now, but now I'm standing up and I'm amused and a little bit flummoxed and I don't know what to do right now. And I can't. What is happening in my studio, Dr. Duffy?
It's been an interesting few seconds.
Okay. So, Tom, you pulled up an article about the moment kids realize their entire lives are online, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm like, oh, that's interesting. So I'm like walking through the hallways. I'm like, I'm just going to Google my son's name. There's not going to be anything there because I never put his face out there. You know, I never post anything. I never his, like, all this stuff. Like, I have had a shroud of privacy for him. And I Google his name and, like, this whole list of articles that he's written, one of which has, like, almost 4,000 responses on. I mean, he gets more responses than I mean, what is happening? What private world did my son create online that I'm not going to tell you the titles of any of these, but what is happening? What just happened to me?
He's gathered the opposite. Quite a following, right? So, yeah, you're in the opposite. You're in the upside down.
I don't understand. I can't. This is like, there's one, he's written articles for a website.
Yes. Yeah.
I can't.
And they look like they've been read by quite a few people.
I don't have 4,000 people reading my stuff. What? I'm trying not to. Okay, honey, Steve, if you're still up, you have to Google our son's name and see what he's putting out there under his name. I'm sorry. What is happening? Okay. So the article, Tom, was actually about kids finding out that their entire life is online. What I have found out is that with all the hard work that I have done to shield my son from online stuff, he's just putting stuff out there. And remember I told you he wouldn't care what people thought about him if they tried picking out? Like, now I have to download this app and
wait,
see.
Wait, is this Medium?
I can't tell you. I'll tell you during the break.
Yeah, please.
But, like, what is...
So he's like a super prolific writer.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Would it be inappropriate if I straight up just started following your song? Because I'm curious now.
I'm kind of with Tom.
My head is going to explode on the air. Oh, my gosh. I can't read any of these. I mean, not that they're dirty. I just don't want you to find him.
They're like is he like the next Mike Royko?
The voice of
the generation. They are thoughtful pieces. I think it's fair to say that, right?
I have never met Patty's kids, but everything she's told me, I'm like pretty excited to see this.
These go back to 2000. I'm going 8. Look at this. These go back to 2017.
What?
Wow.
My head hurts.
So I have to tell you that if it gives you any comfort at all, the face you're making right now, I've seen parents make so many times.
Yeah.
I just thought, like, what? But he's also, like, writing about our family on here. Like, what is happening? What is this private thing that I've found? Okay.
I think your son might be a teenager.
I have to download this. I have to download this app. Here I am, like, my son's really smart, and he doesn't do anything wrong. Like, this isn't... Look. Okay, let me readjust. I'm just calibrating. I found this out as I was walking into the studio.
And let's think about... I looked at a couple of those titles. I work with a lot of teenagers. They're pretty sophisticated. I don't think there's a whole lot.
Oh boy,
Patty's having a very difficult time.
He's put so much of his own. But I mean, like, okay, it's cool. He's putting his work out there.
Yeah.
He wants to see what people around the world think about them. He's sharing thoughts.
He's confident enough to share his thoughts with the world.
Here's the range. You want to know the range, Tom? It goes from Doctor Who to religion to Sherlock Holmes to politics. And
Your kid's a superstar, Patty.
He's a rock star.
I have to open this app.
I am a little interested in the Doctor Who because I've been out of that community for a while. So maybe if he could convince me.
This about the author. Is there a thing about the author on this?
I got to spend about 5 minutes with this young man, and I guarantee you that this is going to be great reading.
I promise
you that.
Yeah. Well, apparently he puts stuff out there to start a conversation is what it looks like.
Right.
Huh, I wonder where he gets that
but
from.
But now I know why. I'm like,
what an odd thing for him to do.
Like,
right?
Weird.
He's fallen so far from the tree, this Griffin.
He's broadcasting his thoughts and feelings to the world. Would you say about 38 states and parts of Canada?
When the night's clear, Tom. When the night's clear.
Oh, man. All right. What? 3,000? Okay. Whatever. What is okay?
He's accomplished what so many people his age are trying to do. He's got reach.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. His voice is heard.
It looks like it's more like a board where you just throw ideas out there and you look for. I don't know what's happening.
You're stunned to see that he's out there.
I thought we were watching all this the Avengers movies for when the next Civil War the sequel comes out. Whatever what's Infinity War?
This one's Endgame.
Endgame.
So basically, Infinity War Part 2.
Yeah. Well, we were supposed to watch because I believe Captain Marvel is coming out soon. And
March 8th. In case you didn't.
Where would you say is a good place to see the movie Captain Marvel?
I don't know. There's this little place in Rogers Park. I hear a total stud works there. he's a manager. He's usually wearing a hat and a denim shirt.
All right. I think we should go to the 400 in Rogers Park. I think that
maybe.
Dude, are you excited? Familiar.
Are you excited about the Captain Marvel movie coming out?
I mean, yeah. Insofar as like, finally, we have a female. This is the first female fronted Marvel movie.
Yeah.
And it's been 10 years. This has taken 10 years to get to, which I get it, I suppose, but like they went through all these other kind of B-list characters first before they started getting to the heavy hitters. And I don't know, I feel like we could have done Captain Marvel a little earlier, done Black Widow. But I mean, this is also going to be super weird. It's going to be all in space. It's a space opera, which when they started out, they were like, we don't want to go there quite yet. Let's start out with Robert Downey Jr. and Iron Man, something a little bit more grounded. But I'm super excited for it. I think it might get me interested again.
Yeah, the trailers look amazing.
Yeah.
And this wasn't motivated by the Wonder Woman movie coming out, because that was already in the works when they, I'm guessing, had to have greenlit this one.
I think, yeah, this was probably, because these guys are working like literally 10 years in advance. Right. I mean, we're talking about Disney here, essentially. Yeah. But I would say that the Wonder Woman movie showed that it was possible.
Yeah.
And that it can be and will be probably a success, because as many reports have shown, the more diverse a movie is, the better it does. This is just dollars and cents, because it's a wider audience, because people are kind of done with, we've seen it all before when it comes to white dudes and like running around whips and guns. So let's give them something different, and they do amazingly well.
It's kind of amazing that it took so long, in a way, right, to create that diversity and to have female leads in you know, superhero movies.
Especially because the history of film is so female-centric. Like, you can go back to some of the earliest recorded films, and they're female directors. It's just that they kind of got pushed out by societal norms or, you know, there were bigger names. Like, there weren't a ton of women making westerns, really, and westerns were super popular. That's John Ford's territory.
Right.
Howard Hawks.
So that's when men took over. It was when the odors became a thing.
Yeah. And, you know, this is just how things go sometimes. I'm not... I personally, I'm glad that we're starting to turn it around, and maybe we can't put too much of a value judgment on the way history plays out. But yeah, it's turning around because more people are interested. People want something different.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Now, you know, are you going to watch the Academy Awards on Sunday?
Doc? I will.
You are?
Sure. Yeah.
A lot of people are excited about some of these movies that are nominated.
Yeah.
And Tom, what are some of your what are you really looking forward to? I really do hope Spike Lee wins.
I'm looking forward to what they're going to do without a host.
Oh, yes.
I'm like very, because last time they did that, Rob Lowe did like an 11-minute dance and singing
Snow
number.
White.
Horrifying.
The low point for Rob Lowe's career, if we're being honest.
And here was the thing. He'd already, like a video of, you know, a amateur porn video had just come out of him.
Yes.
And they were like, you know, the Snow White thing was worse, oddly.
Yeah.
It was weird.
You would think he could get better production value.
You would think.
On the video.
He was just ahead of the curve. He was 10 years too early. Yeah. Or 10 or 15 years too early, the Kardashians. And,
you couldn't hire like the Coen brothers to direct it?
You would
like,
think.
Yeah.
Somebody.
His timing was just off then.
Yeah.
He's picked up on it since then.
I guess. Yeah, there's not going to be a host. They're actually also going to get non-celebrity types to also hand out awards, I believe. Serena is going to be... Is that right?
I haven't even been keeping up with it because...
You gave up.
Well, because after they did the like, oh, we're going to pass out these awards during the commercials. Oh, no, we're not. And then back to the popular film thing like earlier last year. Oh, no, we're not. We're not going to do that anymore. They can't seem to decide how to just make a show.
Right.
Because they're so worried about whether or not it's going to bring in ratings. And I understand that. But I will say the original Academy Awards, do you know how long it took for them to pass out all the awards?
How long?
15 minutes.
Oh, gosh.
They passed out every award. And now, granted, there were less awards. Mm-hmm. They've added many more awards over the years. But it took about 15 minutes. It was more of a dinner party than anything.
Right.
Yeah.
So no speeches, I assume. Just like
very short. Yeah. Sure. Very, very short.
And I think if you see some of the early footage of it, it was kind of like when you would go to your baseball, you know, banquets.
Banquets, yeah.
Right? Where you have all the trophies on the table and they call your name and you go get it. Like, it looked more like that. I think we should go back to that.
Seriously.
I think
we'd watch it.
I'd watch an hour-long Academy Awards.
Yeah. And, it's because there's so much spectacle around. And granted, a lot of the fun is the spectacle. I do like a little spectacle, a little razzle-dazzle, as they say.
And part of it is has been the host, traditionally. For me growing up, Johnny Carson
was
great.
Yeah.
Steve Martin.
Old clips of, like, Bob Hope.
Yeah.
So much fun to watch.
Robin Williams, Billy Crystal.
Yep, you know? Yep. Oh, Billy Crystal had some great years.
Yeah. Some of the duds. I thought Chris Rock was okay. Letterman was okay. Whoopi was okay.
Yeah. Letterman was pretty bad, actually, in the end, right? I mean, for a guy who I always admired, I was really struck by how bad that was.
He was himself, though. And it was more that he was out of place,
right?
I think, than that he was, I mean, he was himself.
Yeah. Letterman's a weird guy.
Yeah.
Weird guy doesn't do the Oscars.
No.
He should have done the Razzies.
Right.
By the way, Tom, because my head was exploding when I came in here, and I think I've backed off of the crazy, I didn't hear what the bump music was. The 630 says there's no way I'm going to know what that was. So,
oh, wow. Well, it's the only band that matters, The Clash.
I would not have guessed The Clash.
The Magnificent Seven. Yes, it was during their kind of like reggae era.
My husband's been playing The Pretenders a lot.
It's a great band.
Again, my problem at home is that we have a smart speaker and I can't ask it to do anything for me as far as playing music.
Right.
I'm like, what did I say today? I don't know what to ask for. Because I was telling you guys, I don't know even albums. I can't, you know, I'll do soundtracks sometimes. You know what's really fun is the soundtrack to Guardians of the Galaxy.
Super fun.
Really, really fun.
Not only, right. It's weird. I've got that on, you know, on my streaming service. I also have it on vinyl and on cassette tape.
Oh.
Me and my girlfriend found the cassette tape because they did a limited run.
No kidding. They really did?
Yeah. And that's I've got a cassette clever. Player. For God knows why.
We have, because Declan loves little sound makers. Like, he has ones that will have, like, all different kinds of sounds, like a car horn or a baby crying. And some of them are goofy ones or screams and things like that. But they also, Tom, they make a sound machine that plays some of the songs from that. And he loves that one, too. But it looks like a cassette tape.
That's
so
awesome.
It's a toy. So he pushes a button.
Does it have the little, like, orange headphones, or is it just the cassette player?
It's just the cassette, and you push a button on that, though. And it makes sounds. I'll bring it in one night and show you.
I'd love to see it.
I got him one for Christmas, because he throws them when we travel. He throws them at people.
That's great. Great little retro.
Try to find some small things.
Yeah.
Now we have to decide what we're going to do, what we meant to get to, or tell me something good. These are a lot of good articles. I think we have to do, I got to tell you about the Wisconsin High School cheerleaders and what they received awards for, don't I? Kind of got to tell you that. All right. We'll find out more in a moment on 720 WGN.
We didn't have time for it. We didn't have time to talk about it. It did not make the show. It had to go. Maybe next time. I don't know. This is the end of the show. We gotta go. The end of the show. Go slow.
So, Dr. Duffy, as you know, producer Tom Huff pulled a bunch of great stories.
Yes.
And we just don't have time to get to all of them, so we save the last few moments of the show. Sometimes we say, tell me something good.
Yeah.
But some of these are really good. Wisconsin High School cheerleaders received awards for biggest breasts and butt at a banquet. I bet you that was a longer ceremony than the first Academy Awards.
Oh, yeah.
It probably was.
And guess what? They've come under fire for this award ceremony.
No. Go figure.
Yeah.
Are you kidding?
What year is it again? I got to check my phone. What year is it? When I was a lifeguard at North Avenue Beach, I won the Tower Betty Award, which was for best butt in the tower at the North Avenue Beach. So that was... I don't have that. I don't have that award anymore.
was the prize just like a pack of buns from Jewel?
It was a Barbie doll with a lifeguard suit on.
Creative.
Yeah,
it's something.
She was blonde. It was very sad.
Weak.
Mm. I know. Where did all my other stories go? Did I throw things around when I found out that my son has been publishing pieces on a website?
The answer to that is yes.
Yes. Did I? What happened?
I can try to go from memory.
We're going to sell Montana to Canada.
Yeah.
Yes. I think that's I propose that rather than Montana, because I do like Casper. Oh, yeah, it's in Wyoming. Yeah. I've never been to Montana. I take it back. I was in Wyoming.
Oh.
You know what? We can get Montana has which big national park is in Montana?
Yellowstone.
Yeah.
I don't want to give country.
Yeah,
I don't want to give that up though.
No.
I mean, where Yogi Bear?
Yeah.
Well, Jellystone.
That's jelly. Yeah. Still, it's a bird. Right. It's a
that is Jellystone.
I say North Dakota. I want to like North Dakota. Is Montana eager to go? or
I can't imagine that they would really notice any difference except for like free healthcare.
And there's very, very few people.
Now, Tom,
very spread out.
They are spread out. It's the same thing like Montana. Now, Tom, people would tell you it's not free.
True.
It's a part of the tax system. So
exactly.
It's just that. I did find some of the stories. All right. So there is, by the way, that's an online petition to sell Montana. I propose that we sell, and please
you're going
don't,
for Dakota.
North Dakota. I like South Dakota, and I don't dislike North Dakota. I did a lot of stand-up comedy there. They're nice enough people, but I've also traveled all over Canada. They're more Canada.
They're more Canadian, huh?
Although we do have an Air Force base in Minot, so I don't think we can do that. It's a pretty important one. All right, then never mind.
Maybe we can carve that out.
No, because it's the northern part of Montana. That'd be tough.
Yeah, okay, we're stuck with that.
I know, because it's a 19-hour train ride.
Wow, you're kidding.
Yeah, I'm not kidding about that one. Yeah, cool. By the way, more than 7,500 people have signed the petition to sell Montana to Canada. Chris Hemsworth is going to play Hulk Hogan in a biopic for Netflix.
Yes.
But
finally.
Your question, Dr. Duffy?
My question is, do we need a biopic on Hulk Hogan at all?
I didn't know who he was until Rocky III.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Well, I mean, granted,
you weren't alive yet.
I wasn't alive yet. But yes. I was just immediately aware of Hulk Hogan. I definitely had my Hulkamania T-shirt.
You were born probably aware of Hulk. You're very pop culture savvy.
Oh my God, it's the only thing I have left. I'm gonna be real here.
Oh boy. Yeah. So, what would you expect from a Chris Hemsworth as Hulk Hogan?
He's gonna have to probably tan a bit because the thing about Hulk Hogan is that his skin looks a bit like a hot dog. It's very taut and pink.
I'm not really comfortable with my Thor playing Hulk Hogan.
He'd be really good. I'd love to hear him just going like, brother.
Oh, right. He's gonna have to gravel up the voice and dye the hair and.
It's going to be great. It'll have to go long. Have to have a ridiculous handlebar, like, mustache and, like, kind of a beard situation. It's going to be so good.
President Trump has announced that he will be meeting with the leader of North Korea once again. So a barber shop in Hanoi is offering a hair-raising event ahead of the Trump-Kin summit. So they're offering haircuts to those who want to look like either one of the leaders. So you can get a Trump cut or Kim cut. I mean, Kim cut. Kim cut, Trump cut. Trump cut, Kim cut. And I guess now I'm getting a Bobby Slayton joke stuck in my head because he says that most of the cuts look like Mo from the Three Stooges. That's not my joke. Not my joke. It is that of Bobby Slayton. Just want everyone to know.
Fair enough.
And then it goes into a lot of very stereotypical gestures and words.
Got it.
That I'm not going to use.
Got it.
Not on this family
station. Probably wise. If you could choose one, let's say you were doing one for kicks. Someone made you pick Trump or Kim. Would you go Trump or Kim?
Well, I'd go with Kim. I think I'd go with Kim.
Right, kind of a cool side cut.
Exactly.
Right, the black hair in the middle.
Yeah. I think I could pull that off somehow.
All right. What about you, Tom?
I'd probably go Trump because then it would be removable, right? So they would shave my hair off and then put a hair piece on.
Right.
Right. Okay, then yeah.
All right, then. By the way, one of the patrons said, I like Donald Trump's haircut. It looks great and it fits my age, said 66-year-old, I can't say that word, Lee High. The middle name is spelled Fuhc.
Got it.
You've got to be kidding me.
No, I'm not kidding.
No, that's, I mean, there you go.
Yeah, there you go. That seems like, I can't say the name of one of my favorite TV shows on Netflix. I'm certainly not saying this yet.
Right, you can't say that one.
Name.
Great show, though.
Yes.
Yeah.
By the way, but he is a little bit concerned about the orange hair color. He's hoping that the salon owner will then turn his hair color back to normal. Once you strip it, in order to dye dark hair, you have to bleach it. You take all the color out first and then add color in. Like for mine, you have to bleach it.
It would take a lot. For you to do the Trump would take a lot of work then. That would be a while in the chair.
Yeah, I have only ever done highlights. By the way, I'm cutting off my hair next month.
Oh, I want to be here that day.
I'm taking 10 inches off to donate to Wigs of Love.
Locks of Love?
Yeah, there's a couple of different ones. Wigs to Wear. There's a couple of different sites. There's one where you can track your wig. What happens to it.
Right. And you're really, this is a real thing.
Yes,
you're really doing this.
Well, my hair comes down to here now.
Wow.
So I can actually go.
And you're not tracking the wig in real time, right? It's just they tell you that.
I follow it. I'm actually going to drive behind. I'm going to give it to somebody.
The microchip and.
Now we're talking.
That's a Stephen King story right there, I'll tell you. The Wig Woman.
Dada Duffy, you know, I have failed to ask how people can find you online, your podcast with Heidi Stevens.
Yes.
Yes. Please tell us.
Yeah, so I have a podcast with my wife, Julie. I have a podcast with Heidi. I have my practice. Anything about me that you could possibly want to know or need to find is at drjohnduffy.com. Thank you.
Drjohnduffy.com. Please come back in a few weeks.
I will, I promise.
It was Wellness Wednesday. I forgot to mention that. Oh. That worked out very well.
I feel so well.
Perfect.